It was probably in about third or fourth grade that people were starting to notice the way that I was eating or the lack of eating, the excessive exercise. I had a few teachers raise their concerns. At the age of 8, I put myself on my first liquid diet. I refused to eat solid food, and I didn't realize that what I was doing was wrong or harmful. You know, I didn't have the knowledge around what was happening to my body, and I had no self-esteem, self-worth. You know, I never felt pretty enough or good enough or, you know, excelled enough in my sports that this was a way I felt that I was, you know, aiding in my abilities as an athlete. Gymnastics and ballet were my two sports, and they consumed my free time. That was what I loved to do. And it became very competitive, and in that world, thinness and appearance plays such a huge part in the way where you're judged and your ability to compete. And that lifestyle was part of my life before I even realized I had a problem. I realized I was jeopardizing my health probably in high school, was when I really had some awareness around how sick I was, but I wasn't willing to admit that to anyone else. With eating disorders, it's a secret. Everything is very private, and it's an issue of control, and that was the last thing I wanted to let go of. You know, I felt like my life was out of control, and my emotions and things like that, I couldn't deal with. So my body and my food intake and my exercise were things that I could control, and I was very good at controlling that. Not only were the behaviors and the eating disorder a secret, but my feelings and emotions were secrets too. I didn't want to put anything out there for it to be judged. You know, I felt judged every second of every day just by my appearance alone, and that stress shut me down. So I didn't want anyone to see who I really was or what my thoughts were. And it finally got to a point where I didn't even know who I was or what I thought or what I liked or what I didn't like. I had no opinion on anything. I was just consumed with negative behaviors that, you know, shut me down on every level. You know, physically, emotionally, spiritually, I was dying in every sense.
Welcome to Unhooked. My name is Pastor Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Kitty, and today we're going to be talking about anorexia and bulimia.
We have some great guests here today. We have Laurel Warner and Barbara Dickinson. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What is the difference between anorexia and bulimia? I know they're both eating disorders.
I'll go with anorexia, and that's where somebody induces self-starvation. They have a great fear of becoming fat. They usually maintain a body weight at 15% below or even farther than that, below what they're supposed to be. For women, a loss of the menstrual cycle. And in the mindset of just control, and the eating disorder becomes a way to control their life. They put all their energy into it. The medical side of starvation becomes evident, though, after you've lost 15% or more of your body weight. And that's why it becomes so obvious that they're going to need help.
Yeah. So unlike anorexia, people that struggle with bulimia, they engage in binge eating, planned binge eating, and then they purge, either by vomiting or by laxatives. We think about people that are bulimia as more hidden than anorexia, because they can have a normal body weight, mm-hmm. and you may not recognize that they're struggling with that particular issue. Anorexic, as self-discipline, bulimia tend to be much more impulsive. Mm-hmm. And bulimias don't necessarily have the same struggle in terms of having a misperception of their body proportion or their body size.
So who's at risk with this? I mean, you mentioned women or a woman. Is it particularly
difficult women for females. Women suffer from it more than men, but yeah. I think it's increasing in the population of men and sure. boys. Young girls, as young as 8, wow. are starting to suffer. I'm seeing actually a 10-year-old mm. right now. Wow. She's now 11. I've been seeing her for a year. She comes with her mom, and she doesn't want to grow up. She equates growing up with becoming fat. So there is a huge thing in our culture, if you will,
yeah.
about body image, but also about you have to diet, you have to be thin to be okay. And it's affecting kids at younger and younger ages. So the great age 9, 10 and up into college age.
That young, they're already young. Receiving the message that to be big is bad, or to grow up even, and to just naturally
to be
get
who
bigger.
You really are yourself, to yeah. let your body be what it's naturally going
wow.
to be, whether what size, medium, small, a little bit large.
Well, it sounds like then there's major psychological components. There's a mental health issue to this.
Significant mental health issues. It's just around low self-esteem for the individual that's struggling with anorexia. Again, as we mentioned before, there's that distorted body image mm-hmm. that when they look at themselves, they see themselves as being fat, even if there is evidence of bones being protruded through their skin. They struggle with that.
Mm-hmm. So with anorexia, it's more the psychological, I don't want to be fat, my body image. With bulimia, does it have the similar issue?
Not so much to that extent in terms of the whole misperception of one's body image, but there is issues around anxiety. There's also issues around being fat as well, but not to the extent as it is with anorexia.
With anorexia too, it's much harder in some ways to deal with. First, from the physical side, because if you're starving, you must address the medical side. They all right. go together. People with anorexia, with that perfectionist, that restricting mindset, there's a sense of unworthiness, mm. and they often believe they don't deserve food because food means life. And therefore, I've failed humanity. I'm not worthy, so therefore, I don't deserve food. So that can be kind of a chain of thought with anorexia.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And with bulimia, we have more the sense of impulsivity.
Okay.
That I need to have something and I must have it. And so, you know, there's a grabbing and there's a getting. And then there is also an emptying of oneself.
So what's happening physically with the body? You know, with all the overeating and the purging and the binging?
And I have, they go together. But anorexia with self-starvation, number one, you're cognitively impaired because mm-hmm. you're not getting enough blood glucose to the brain. That's our fuel for the brain. But you start losing tissue, not just on the outside. People think, well, I'm going to lose fat, but you lose muscle tissue. Mm-hmm. Your heart's affected, the gut's affected, you lose brain cells, mm-hmm. and just on and on and on, unless there's an intervention or they're able to get help. So it's medical starvation. The fact that it's psychologically induced, it's the same as starvation as if you were a POW or sick and not be able to eat food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with bulimia, there are issues in terms of if you're vomiting or because you're doing lots of laxative, it also impacts the body in terms of what's interesting, the physician that tends to notice it sooner would be the dentist
mm-hmm.
because of the impact to the enamel
to
on the teeth.
Yeah.
Yes.
The teeth will get worn down.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about young ladies and body image, and that's particularly important. I know, you know, as society always tells us and through media and so forth. But talk a little bit about the guys. Are they dealing with the same thing? Is it body image with the boys too?
Yes.
Well, yes. I mean, I think there's this movement in terms of having a six-pack. When you look at advertisement or what is the message and who is the person that's seen as attractive in terms of male, it's certainly not someone that's overweight.
Yeah, that's true.
And so they also experience it. I think also with boys, there tend to be a history of trauma often that is not discussed.
Okay. Yes.
They're still less likely to come forward, although it's becoming easier in some ways for them because it's more acknowledged in the public sector.
So there's more and more society, media pressures on a certain way of looking for both genders, sounds like.
Both. In our program, when we see teens or adults who are involved in sports, in certain categories of sports, from gymnastics to dancing to ballet, Cirque du Soleil type activities, or even marathon running or cross-country running for girls in high school, those are very oriented toward your body and how it looks and how it functions. Yeah.
Such enormous pressure that we put on young people in our culture today. And sometimes, unfortunately, they're responding in very poor ways. But hopefully we can help them get back on track. We're going to take a break right now, and we'll be right back.
In my personal experience, eating disorder did feel like a life sentence because that's how I dealt with life, how I dealt with stress, anxiety, fear, happiness, loneliness. It was the way that I dealt with emotions in general and anything that happened. And I was truly convinced that these behaviors would be the only way for me to control and deal with life for the rest of my life. It wasn't until after I was married and in my early 20s that I was hospitalized for the first time. So it went on for, you know, a good 15 years before it was truly addressed. Since then, I've been hospitalized 24 times, in and out for different reasons, you know, sometimes malnutrition, you know, sometimes depression, suicidal ideation, issues with medications. I became a professional patient, very good at knowing what to say and what to do while in treatment to get out. And I did that for a long time. So again, I was sort of managing the eating disorder, you know, giving up certain things, but not, you know, completely giving myself to recovery. You know, saying, okay, well, I'll eat today, but I'm going to run 3 miles. You know, that bargaining with it. And I did that for a couple years, back and forth, and, you know, being kind of manipulative in my recovery and not really being willing to fully surrender. It wasn't until April of this last year that I was finally done. I had a suicide attempt, and that was really the breaking point for me. My marriage ended at that point, and I moved to California, you know, from Illinois. I packed my bags and said, I need help, and I'm done, and I'm ready to do this, and entered into another inpatient treatment facility. It wasn't necessarily the program that fixed me. It was my willingness and my readiness to be done and to change everything in my life. Oftentimes in recovery, you don't want to give it all up. You want to hang on to bits and pieces, and it doesn't work that way. You still continue to get sucked back in. And so I had to kind of take a step back and accept the fact that maybe someone knows better than I do at this point, because what I'm doing is going to take my life. So the willingness played probably the biggest part in why recovery finally happened for me. That's kind of when it changed, was when I surrendered.
Welcome back, where we've been talking about anorexia and bulimia. We were talking about some very significant and potentially serious issues related to both of these disorders. Is treatment something that's important in anorexia and bulimia?
Very much so. Hopefully a person who's suffering from an eating disorder will be able to access treatment either of their own accord or parents or friends. For anorexia, untreated, it still has a 20% mortality rate. So
really?
Anorexics will die untreated at that rate.
Wow. And someone with bulimia, because of all of the significant physiological impact of the binging and the purging, also need to have a holistic treatment that is the medical, the psychological, the social, and the spiritual.
Wow. You know, I'm a father and I'm raising 3 daughters, and I think they're absolutely gorgeous. And yet I know that in this culture, they're going to be pressured and sent so many different messages. How do we help change the messages that young girls get in our culture and in the society. How do we do that?
Well, I think you talked about the fact of being a parent. I think the messages can begin in the home, because that's very crucial. You're so right. The culture sends so many messages to young girls that you need to be thin and you need to look a certain way. But I think that if we can have open, honest conversations with our girls in our homes as well as in our churches, I think that would be a really great place to begin.
And also to model for your own self that you don't use self-derogatory statements about, oh, my thighs are too big and I should go on a diet, because you may not even be meaning it in truth, but kids hear that, and because of the stuff that's in the media, they can often hear that.
How do you respond to that, though? You know, I've even heard my children say that at times about their size or their weight. What does a parent do in that moment? I mean, that's a critical moment. They hear that come out of their child's mouth. It should send some bells, a red flag or something. What do they do to respond in those moments?
One of the things, I am not a parent myself, but having worked with adolescents for many years, anything like that, if they can take a moment to reflect and say, you know, something's going on, where did you hear that? What is that, something must be bothering you about that? And also to then reassure that they are okay the way they are.
And I think the other thing that would be important too, depend upon their age. I mean, I have an adolescent daughter, and from one day to the next, she's beautiful and she's not beautiful. So part of it has, you have to tune into which, what is normative. But at the same time, to also just listen and just have conversations. I just have these random conversations with her about, okay, where are you today and what's going on? And if she says, oh, I just think I'm too fat today, Mommy, I go, okay, so let's talk about where this too fat is coming from. So you gain a sense of, is this really something that she's struggling with, or is just that she just got up this morning and she just did not like the way she looked?
Right, and you said something very key in there, I think, when you said have a relationship with your child. And that's a key part of getting those messages and your child believing your message.
Absolutely. Very crucial is that message. And then valuing what they're saying to you. You don't want to dismiss, but you really want to value. And then what I think that parents can do is it's put a reframe, put a different frame around, create a new narrative, so to speak.
The worst thing we could do is just ignore it. We have to really be tuned in to you know, what's going on. And that speaks to the idea of relationship, too. Biggest thing we can do very often as parents is listen to our kids and take moments to respond and speak into their worlds.
Because realize they're going to hear this at school.
Oh, yeah.
Regardless of how well you're doing at home, they're going to hear it.
And they spend far more time at school than around their peers than they do their parents. So
and,
those are critical
moments. Because we live in this social media, there's Facebook, there's TV, there is everything. You know, once upon a time, you came home and you watched TV. Now you can watch TV on your phone. So they're getting those messages everywhere.
You can watch TV beyond your phone and Facebook all at the same time.
That's correct.
Right? So it is. We're bombarded by different messages, and certainly our kids are receiving those. You know, as Christians, we get a message from the Bible, too, you know, about who we are and where our value and our worth come from. And thankfully, you know, God sees us as his precious children, you know. Speak to the spiritual component to this. How do we help kids get the right message about God?
One thing I'd like to share, because I guess I come from a spiritual background, but also a skeptical background as a kid. And when people come into an eating disorder program, many of them already they've had a connection with God, but it's broken. And they don't value themselves. They look at God as punishing them and what they're doing, even though it supports a way of life for them, the eating disorder. They really don't believe they're worth learning. And so the concept of grace and that God loves them as they are and will help them, not punish them, is very crucial, especially in teens who've not had a good model.
Right. And the other piece in terms of spirituality, a lot of individuals that struggle with anorexia or bulimia have experienced trauma in their lives. And so when they come in, the spiritual piece would be helping them to make sense of the trauma that they have experienced. Because it's very hard when you've experienced trauma. How does a just, good God allow this to happen to me? Right. So there is what we call an existential crisis that you have to help them through in terms of the spiritual piece.
Once again, it's that relationship with God, the bigger piece of you know, just like in the 12 steps, of really knowing who he is and really getting that relationship with him.
Absolutely.
Yes. He's a God that heals.
You know?
So that trauma can be healed.
Yes.
And then God also, he's a God of grace, and he accepts you He accepts you right where you are, and you know, right in the body that he gave you.
Exactly, and that he will get you through it even when you fall or when you have a mistake or when you have a relapse, that he will get you through this.
Absolutely. There's also all those messages about the body being the temple of God, and that we're, you know, fearfully and wonderfully made. And
one thing I want to speak to that quickly is, which I believe that, and I think people come for treatment would believe that, but it can work against them at some point, because they'll often switch to the rigid perfectionistic eating of I can only eat this way, everything has to be organic, everything has to be only whole grain, and they're creating another type of eating disorder.
Wow. And that speaks to the treatment we were talking about. You have to deal with all the facets in the etiology.
Absolutely. Very crucial.
Well, ladies, you have been absolutely terrific. Thank you so much for sharing everything.
Thank
Barbara
you for having
and
us.
Laurel.
Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Unhooked, we'll be right back.
Probably the lowest point in my recovery process was very early in my treatment, and I was hospitalized and on a feeding tube and really on my deathbed at that point. You know, it was life or death, and I wasn't sure if I was going to make it. And I said to myself that night, laying in bed, that if I survive this, that it is my dream to reach other people that are going through the same thing, to create that hope for other people that you can go through something really horrific and terrible and be at that rock bottom place and still be okay. You know, that there is hope and it is possible. It's been a really tough road. It's been exhausting, and you know, I've lost a lot going through that. You know, lots of relationships, you know, trust. But I've found so much more having gone through it. You know, now I know who I am, and I have, you know, my identity, and I have self-worth today, and that didn't exist for me for many years. You know, the things that I've survived and made it through wouldn't be possible if there wasn't, you know, something out there greater than myself to keep me safe and alive through everything that I've put myself through, you know, with the suicide attempts and the severity of the anorexia. I shouldn't have survived, and somehow I managed to come out on the other side, and I can't take that credit. You know, I don't necessarily understand it, but I know that it's there, because I would never have gotten to the point that I'm at today without that. Something that I'm really passionate today about is creating the awareness and spreading the word about eating disorders and mental illness, and trying to remove some of the stigma that comes along with that, that it is okay to be open and honest and talk about these things, because it being a secret is what keeps us sick. You know, talking about it takes the power out of it. An eating disorder doesn't have to be a life sentence. You know, you can overcome it and have a really successful life. You can be happy just the way that you are. My name is Bridget, and I'm Unhooked.
Hello, friends. Barbara and Laurel just shared with us exciting information about how to overcome anorexia. So many people that struggle with this problem struggle with perfectionism and control because they haven't been able to control much else about their life. Many times they come either from a history of a chaotic family or from a family where there's been some form of devastating abuse. When Bridget shared her story, we saw how people can be so devastated from anorexia and how it many times is a life-threatening condition. But when we think about control, when we think about perfectionism, we think about people who are not free, people who need to be in control of their lives, because for them to not be in control means that their life might fall apart. They have learned from the course of their life that for them to be in control is everything, because for them to be out of control means devastation, hurt, and pain. You know, friends, there's only one person that can truly control your life, and that person is Jesus. But for someone like an anorexic to give control over to Jesus is a very frightening thing. It means I'm not going to be in control anymore. But what we've learned from recovery is whenever I attempt to manage my own life, whenever I attempt to control my own life, life gets out of control, because without God, we can't. And so we're suggesting today that you consider giving your life to Jesus, that you consider allowing Him to be in control. Ask yourself, is He big enough? Is He strong enough? Is God enough of a God for you to allow Him to control your life today? It's important that you consider this question, because how you answer it is going to determine your future. Are you going to continue being your own God and being in control of your life? Even though it's a scary thing to do, will you surrender your life to Jesus today and allow Him to truly be the God that He has always wanted to be? I'm hoping that you'll make this decision today. And for more information about how you can break away from habits that hurt, contact Adventist Recovery Ministries. And for prayer, call 1-888-446-7388. Choose to become unhooked today.